Welcome to Focus on the Family's weekend broadcast. We hope the following program will challenge you and encourage you in your faith journey.
My job in my marriage is to love, like I said in my vows. It's not about being loved. See, the lie is that I need to find someone who will love me. And I think so many couples enter into their marriage and go through their relationship over the years believing that I've got to keep figuring out how to get her to love me.
That's Dr. Greg Smalley identifying a pretty common challenge in marriage today. What is true love? What does it look like? And how can you experience it in your own relationship? That's our topic today on Focus on the Family. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Fuller, and your host is Focus President Jim Daly.
John, I'm sure most couples, when they get married, they're in deep love, maybe mixed with a little infatuation. And then over the years, that infatuation might wear off, like the second, third argument over where you squeeze the toothpaste or whatever it might be. Something is going to throw a roadblock up to say, man, did I marry the right person? Somewhere down the line. Now, there are a handful of people, and I know you're listening, because you'll write or get in touch with us to say, my husband and I, we have never had an argument. God bless you. That's amazing. I don't think it's typical of most couples, though. And over time, that initial passion and undying love can begin to diminish. It's just potentially a fact of life. And before long, one spouse or the other is beginning to wonder, where did our love go? What do we need to do to get that back? Today, we're going to help you find it.
Right. What you're describing, Jim, really points back to the struggle that Greg was sharing in that clip, Greg Smalley. So many men and women get the wrong idea about love and marriage, and we think, oh, it's about you making me happy, which is, of course, not the idea.
It's funny to even hear that because it sounds so self-centered, right? Your job is to make me happy. Are we got it? We got it straight?
Yeah,
now?
It all works fine.
It all works well. Well, listen, we're going to cover a lot of the right stuff today when it comes to making your marriage healthier than it may be today. Mm-hmm. And let me remind you, this is why Focus on the Family is here, to be that resource center for you. I've described Focus before as just this huge treasure trove of resources to help you in your marriage, your parenting, and so many other things. So lean in today. Let's grow together in our relationship with our spouse.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Greg Smalley and his wife, Erin, do a lot of speaking, writing, and counseling, and they together head up our marriage team here at the ministry, and we're so glad to have them in the studio with us. They've written a wonderful book. It's called Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage, 12 Secrets for a Lifelong Romance. Get your copy today when you give us a call, 800, the letter A in the word family, or stop by focusonthefamily.com/broadcast for all the details.
Greg and Erin, welcome back to the studio. You're just down the hall, so it's not a long journey for you.
It was a very long commute today. Well,
I got
let's
lost.
Let's not talk about that. Erin's going, that was a long drive, and
well, we drove together.
Oh, is that the problem?
Yes. It was especially long.
Well, let's start with that. What happened this morning that made the drive so long?
It was actually really fun to come together.
Oh, that's good.
But we're not one of those couples that you mentioned who've never had conflict. So that
you say that with a big smile.
That ended, probably 4 days into our marriage.
Well, I know that story. It is kind of amazing. You guys seem to embrace conflict after you learned the benefit of conflict. Maybe we should just start there. Is there a benefit to conflict?
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity when couples walk through conflict in a healthy way. Often when we hear the word conflict, we think of combat. And
yeah,
so
that's true.
Healthy conflict is there's a possibility that you can grow and learn about yourself, about your spouse, and even about your relationship. And as my father-in-law always said, it's the doorway to intimacy.
That's good.
It's my father, and I curse him for, yes.
Dad, Gary Smalley, comes up a lot, doesn't he?
Exactly.
He was the marriage guru back in the 80s and 90s, and yeah, what a great man. So sorry for that loss.
Yeah.
He passed away how many years ago now?
About six.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
Erin frequently quotes his best lines.
I can't imagine being married in that kind of family. Well, your dad used to say to
exactly.
Listen to me.
Listen to your father.
Let's start with commitment. That's, I think, in line with your romance secret number one of the 12 secrets. So talking about commitment, I understand your commitment to each other was tested, as you said, pretty early. Is this the day four story? Is this yet another test of commitment?
This was day four.
Okay, so what happened?
Yeah, so on our honeymoon, one of the things that I was very on the honeymoon. excited about. So it became a huge expectation of mine. So when we talk about unrealistic expectations, this is a great example. So there was a particular hike that I really wanted us to go on to a waterfall.
And you're in Hawaii.
We're in Hawaii. So
nice choice.
So when we get to the waterfall, we're going to play around and have this amazing moment as this brand new married couple. And so each day I would wake up and go, Aaron, let's go hiking. Let's go to the waterfall. And there was always something else that she wanted to do. So literally the last day before we returned home, I kind of went, you know, this was important to me. Could we do this? Fine. So we set out.
Wait a second. I want to. Did you really say it like that?
I didn't.
Fine.
I didn't say it like that.
Jean,
I think
would
it was
say,
more
check
like
that. One.
No, I think she said, "Well, your dad wouldn't want to go on this."
Okay, so back to reality. It was
and
fine.
Yes,
sure,
and
let's
so
go.
Off we went, and we got to this waterfall, and Greg ran and jumped in, and I didn't, for a very important reason. It said no swimming.
Ah.
Yeah, and so this was it. Like, it took us long enough to get to this place that this is our one and only shot. And so I'm thinking, oh, who cares? We're in the middle of nowhere. No one else is around. I'm like, just come on in. It'll be fine. So then I'm trying to do everything I can to coax her into the water. She wouldn't do it. We start arguing. It escalates to the point that I say to my bride of 4 days, fine, if this is how you're going to be, then this honeymoon is ruined for me.
Oh, my goodness.
That's dramatic.
Yes.
Yes.
Which should go on everybody's list of what not to say.
Correct.
On your honeymoon. And so as you can imagine, we were totally
so
disconnected.
How did everything work out that night?
Yeah.
Let's
well,
leave that for later.
No. Yeah. So we ended up in a little luau. That was our last adventure.
It needed to go to use the tickets, but we weren't speaking. So
this
that
is the
was
the luau?
Yes. Yeah. We weren't speaking at the luau, but we were sitting by each other.
Yeah. So we're kind of stuffed in. She's not talking. I start thinking, this probably isn't going to work out for me tonight when she's not talking to me.
Day four, you still have some ideas of what you want to happen.
Exactly. And so I'm thinking, man, I got to repair this thing. And so we were literally like sardines, all these people. And so I kind of pried my arm out just to put around her, just to test. You know, you're trying to figure out how in trouble am I really. And she didn't acknowledge me at all. And so I then started gently rubbing her shoulder, thinking, well, surely she'll see that I'm being sensitive and caring. No reaction. So I kind of lean in to say something to her. And my eyes hit the eyes of the woman sitting next to Aaron on the other side. Somehow, because we were all jammed in there, their shoulders overlapped. I had been rubbing this woman's shoulder. I kid you not.
A complete stranger.
Okay, yeah. This is going deeper deeper.
Yes. So that would be strike two.
but ironically, I became friends with those two ladies, and we still get
funny.
Christmas cards
still
from
truly.
Them.
Yeah, there's always a P.S. at the bottom, Greg, whenever you're tired of Aaron.
You had to be crammed in there, you know, to make that mistake.
Yeah. But I tell you, what hit me, though, is it applies to commitment. Is that it rattled me that 4 days into our marriage, we ended up in this huge fight. So we didn't talk to each other that whole afternoon into the luau. And it made me go, wait, this isn't the way it's supposed to work. Mm-hmm. Is there something wrong with her? That was my first guess. There has to be something wrong with her.
Well, I was already wondering what was wrong with you rubbing the woman's shoulder sitting next to me.
I think Aaron has some more of a case for who's at fault here.
True. I agree. Looking back. Yeah. But it hit me in a way that it caused some distance between us as we both tried to figure out this shouldn't be happening. So obviously there's something wrong with us, with our marriage. Yeah. Something is going on versus what I've now learned in those moments, how important it is to let her know that, hey, I'm with you. I know we're in disharmony. I know that we see things differently. I'm sorry for rubbing the woman's shoulder next to you.
Are you still in counseling?
Yeah.
But she is.
But to let her know I'm with you till the end. In looking back, when I think of commitment, as Aaron and I talk about this, I think the most important part of commitment, like I wish someone had told me this. Like, where was my dad, the marriage guru, with this advice?
Oh, I think he was letting you learn your way.
That's true. That's fair.
That's what I think.
But what I wish I would have learned is how important grit is as it applies to commitment.
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned in the book, and I read this book as a business book, ironically, but Sun Tzu's Art of War.
Yeah.
You know, we did it in a business environment, you know, and there's so many of those principles that you can apply, but I was a little shocked to see you use it in a marriage context.
You wouldn't think
how
the
world
art of
does
war.
The Art of War apply to marriage?
Yeah, he had a great philosophy that when they were marching into battle, you would actually have people go back and burn supplies, burn bridges, burn anything that would allow his troops to retreat. Mm-hmm. Because retreat is easy when it's an option. And that's the idea about commitment, is that I want Aaron to know our only option is to move forward together. Divorce isn't an option. And so let's move forward, which means that we've got to figure certain stuff out. And that creates that grit in our marriage. Grit means that I will do anything necessary, whatever I need to do to keep moving forward, then I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
And this grit really showed up a few years ago when our daughter, our oldest daughter, went through a divorce. Mm-hmm. And that's how it hit me. And I went through a season to where I jumped into counseling. I started meeting with this fantastic counselor, Christian counselor here in Colorado Springs, and just said, he was like, "Why are you here?" I went, "I don't know, but I want to know that there aren't some things that I'm not dealing with that's going to injure my marriage." Mm-hmm. And did that for a solid year, just working on stuff, and we figured some stuff out.
Yeah, and the thing that's critical there that is most important for people to hear is you talk in the book about your faith commitment being the foundation.
Yeah.
That there's going to be a lot of swirl, there's going to be a lot of tribulation that pops up in your marriage. And if you can have that commitment to the Lord first, that will give you the foundation for commitment to each other. I really appreciate that, because I feel like Gene and I have shared that.
Yeah.
Speak to that.
Mm-hmm. There's something so powerful when a couple goes before God together. A, that infuses your relationship with unity. And, you know, you're seeking the same morals, the same values. You're attending a body of faith together. And that's creating a village of like-minded people to surround you, to fight for your marriage with you. And it's so important to have that. And I know there's actual research that Brad Wilcox looked at, and he looked at the number one indicator for those that will have the lowest divorce rate are religious couples that marry in their 20s that haven't cohabitated and they share a deep faith.
Yeah.
Lowest divorce rate.
Yeah, that's good.
So it has a huge impact on a relationship.
Yeah, but this was painful though in our marriage when we started off, because I had a dad who was a spiritual giant, and it was super intimidating for me. I'd get up often in the morning and find him at his chair, like on his knees with his Bible in front of him, and believe that those were the kind of things that would then define me as a spiritual leader in our family. And I just wasn't measuring up at all. Mm. And I began to really shut down. And there were times I didn't want to go to church. I didn't want to pray with Aaron. And here's a new bride. She's going, "Man, I long for this between the two of us." And yet it wasn't happening. Looking back, I felt so intimidated that I couldn't do it the way he did it. I remember one time sitting, so he would teach marriage seminars. I'd go with him. I actually worked at his book table. So I'd be selling books.
Sounds like you may have missed some of the content.
Well, because I was out in the lobby. He didn't let me come in to hear the good content. And so we were just over dinner one time, and he goes, "Hey, how are things going between you and Aaron?" I was like, fine. You know, now that we got the whole, you know, conflict on our honeymoon straightened out, and that woman's leaving me alone now that I was rubbing her shoulder. And I said, "Yeah, things are fine." He goes, "You know, how are you guys doing spiritually?" I'm like, I said, "Well, you know what, honestly," I said, "it's not going well, and it's your fault." And he kind of went, like, thinking I was joking. He's looking at me like, "Wait, are you being serious?" And I said, "Dad, I can't do what you do. And I feel so much pressure. I just don't know how to do that." And it was one of those odd moments that he literally comes up from his side of the table, kind of scoots me over, scoots in next to me, and just gets right in my face. And he goes, "Son," He goes, let me tell you the spiritual man that I see when I look at you, when I watch you. I was like, what? And he started to go through, listen, I watch you provide for your family, for your wife and your young daughter. He goes, I watch you protect them. I watch you, you know, when there's a problem, you guys work it through. You're committed. And he just started to list all these things that I never would have thought defined spiritual leadership. And I broke down, and I'm just crying at a Denny's or wherever we were, you know, over some whatever. And it was such a powerful moment for me because it redefined expectations of what this should look like in our relationship.
That's good.
This Focus on the Family broadcast will continue in just a moment.
After 11 years, Brett's marriage had grown stale. He wanted something better for him and his wife.
Focus on the Family's helped our marriage from the standpoint of opening our hearts to see things from the other's perspective and to make sure that God is centered in our marriage.
I'm Jim Daly. Together we can give families hope. Donate at focusonthefamily.com/family, and your gift will be doubled.
Feel that nip in the air? It's time to put on fuzzy socks, drink some hot cocoa, and decorate your home with a new season of Focus on the Family's Christmas Stories podcast. This year, we'll talk about the Nativity story in the Gospel of Luke. Join us as we chat about how Christ's birth inspires us, how we celebrate the season, and ways we find that childlike wonder again. Listen to the Christmas Stories podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. Let's resume now with the balance of today's programming.
Let me move it to that inevitable conflict, which, again, I think 98% of couples are going to... I'm always going to leave that door open for the 2% that we never have conflict. Have you ever heard that before?
I get that some people, their style of relating is very agreeable, and they work through their differences. So the question is, are they saying they just don't have difference of agreement or difference of opinion?
Well, and couples handle conflict differently. Some, you know, they're fighters and they are both fighters and it's loud and gregarious. Or some are both withdrawers and it's real quiet.
Right.
But the tension is there. It's just inside.
So let's get back to the fighter, the two of you. Which I think you are the fighter types.
We are.
So in that context, conflict does have a benefit that does help husbands and wives. Mm-hmm. Draw closer together, which is an unsettling formula for some people.
Yeah.
So how does that work? Kind of take us through that, how conflict can actually help us become stronger and closer.
Well, we could tell you a real recent conflict that we went
We always
through.
Love the most recent conflict example.
When Erin bought a new chair for her office and just simply needed my help in moving that chair into her office.
Well, my favorite thing is that this chair sat in the middle of the hallway for like 2 weeks. And I was like, does no one else see that there is a big chair like blocking the hallway? People are just walking around it.
And I'm like, I wasn't questioning her design feature. I just thought it was odd, but it's her chair. So you remember in the morning.
Yeah, I asked Greg, hey, can you just help me move that chair into my office? But we had to lift it and kind of hoist it over the desk. So I couldn't do it alone. I needed it help. And so we began doing that, and it just didn't go so well.
It's not working. And so I'm getting frustrated. And I say to her, listen, lift with your legs. We got to get this thing. So she snaps at me, and I take offense at that, going, I'm the one giving of my time sacrificially, and now you're snapping at me. So I just said, don't yell at me. And she goes, just help me. Because she was also late to see some
clients.
Well,
what he didn't know is I had received a text right before he came downstairs and was like, hey, let's move the chair. I'd received a text that there was a couple waiting in the waiting room at my counseling practice. And I needed to like speed this along. And so I didn't have time for conflict in the middle of moving the chair.
Sounds like you didn't have time to move the chair.
Yes.
Probably. Just an observation.
Yes,
maybe we can do this later tonight.
Yes.
Could we have Jim?
Well, thanks for joining us for this focused broadcast.
No, I'm not picking on Aaron, but, you know, prioritization.
So she snaps at me. I say something to her. And then finally, in my mind, I'm so right and so wronged by her that I just simply let go of the chair and it kind of crashes to the ground. And I say, good luck. And I walk out of our office.
Ooh.
Exactly. I agree. Not, mm-hmm. But I'm telling you that we do that when we get into these arguments and our heart shuts down. Now we're reacting. So I was simply reacting. But in my mind, I'm thinking, man, I was being nice and offering my muscles and professional
to
lifting
a point.
Services. Yeah.
See, my reaction would be to grab the chair and take it out of Gene's hands and put it on the other side of the desk.
I mean, it was
and
like
then say,
400
see,
pounds,
I can do it.
Yeah.
At least 500 pounds. Probably.
Okay.
So he drops the chair. I've got to go. Like, I'm late. And so I'm driving to the counseling center to see this couple that's waiting. And I start thinking, like, I really don't feel comfortable going and working with another couple when I'm in total conflict and disunity with my own husband.
This is the real truth about counselors.
Exactly.
So I get to the office and I'm like, so I start texting Greg. I'm so sorry. I didn't tell you that there was a couple waiting and I was just a little stressed. And, you know, I'm really sorry for how I influenced that interaction.
And I'm reading this text going, uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Ooh.
It's
And I'm expecting
she,
like a nice little, it's okay, you know, we'll talk about it when we get home. I shouldn't have dropped the chair. I didn't get that.
I'm sure I said something like, thank you for owning, you know, the fact that we were in conflict because you chose to. Yeah.
Okay, this is funny.
Yeah. So
this is really good.
It's a great illustration of how pride can manifest itself.
Now, one of the things in the book, when you're talking about this romance secret number 4, which we're on, not that we're naming or listing each one, but this is that idea of true love fights for peace.
Yeah.
You differentiate between combat and negotiation. So you're kind of describing that, I think, now. But
yeah, combat,
why should we avoid combat? What is it and why avoid it? And then what's negotiation look like?
Yeah. I mean, combat would be a good example of dropping a chair when you're in reacting. I mean, it's the reactions that we do when we withdraw or we start criticizing, you know, we get angry. That's the kind of stuff that we want to avoid.
That's combat.
Well, and it's really, it leads to pride.
Yeah.
And pride leads to conflict is what it says in scripture. And so it's when we get triggered and our hearts close that we end up prideful.
Well, and I love Philippians 2:3. So it says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. That's just how pride manifests itself during arguments, especially the vain conceit. Vain conceit means we're excessively proud of our own opinion. And sitting there, when I got the text, I was excessively proud of how I thought she had wronged me and how that if she hadn't done this or that. But all that's the combat stuff because we're shut down.
So take the chair analogy or story the way through. So did you come back that night and how did you work it out?
Yeah, so as I literally sat there, you know, thinking how wronged I was and just I did pray and say, God, I'm feeling totally shut down. Like, give me your perspective. I instantly felt totally humbled. I felt the conviction that he brings, which is great. But he needs to convict me, not Aaron. And so then I texted her going, actually, you know what? I played a big part of this, and I shouldn't have treated you this way. I shouldn't have dropped the chair. That was basically an adult throwing a temper tantrum. That's on me. When you get home tonight, let's talk through this. So when she did come home, because that's the opportunity. That's what we're arguing for, that if we can go circle back. Like Aaron and I have learned to do this by saying, we'll even say to each other after some weird interaction, is there anything we need to repair? Like, do I need to repair something? And a lot of times she'll go, nah, I'm good. Or in this case, she went, yeah, that didn't feel good at all. Let's talk that through.
But it's amazing when someone comes to you with a humble heart, how more likely you are to lean in. And so when Greg was like, yeah, I shouldn't have dropped that chair. I'm so sorry. The humbleness, I was like, oh my word, it just drew me towards him. And just to, you know, just the openness.
Well, let me ask you, what was
brings.
That like? How did that feel?
And you cared.
Yeah,
you took time just to listen and care.
Disrespected, huh? Mm-hmm. That makes sense. That was very
disrespectful.
Plus, you
broke the glass covering my desk.
Exactly.
What are you thinking?
I need a new chair and a desk now. And so, what I've learned is that I think the worst phrase that we use around conflict is conflict resolution. It's such a bad phrase because it implies somehow we've got to find a solution, which what we're finding most of the time, we just need to circle back and repair by just caring about how the other person felt.
But the truth is, Dr. John Gottman says that 70% of conflict is perpetual. So it's things that aren't going to change. Like Greg is an introvert. I'm an extrovert. He's a morning person. I'm a night person. We're not going to wake up and like all of a sudden be different. We have to learn how to manage it. And so really you're saying conflict resolution isn't really the word. It's conflict management. How do we manage our differences?
I'm shocked you're a night person given you've had children.
Yes.
That turned Jean into an
instant
morning person.
Now I have a teenager, so.
Yeah. Well, listen, yes. We have gotten off to a good start, but we have got to wrap up and we want to come back next time. And we really have just scratched the surface and we're going
to
come back if you guys are willing
to
walk down the hall.
As long as you don't yell at me like my dad would.
Yeah, we'll come back and we'll cover some more of this great book. Crazy little thing called marriage, and we'll talk about some more of those principles you've laid out. And let me recommend to you, the listener, the viewer, man, you can tell the content's coming from the heart with Greg and Aaron. There's no fluff here. It's all out there and exposed, which I so appreciate. And it's probably, for many of you, it's things that you're experiencing too. So this will be directly applicable. Get in touch with us. If you can become a monthly donor to Focus, $10 is great. It doesn't have to be a lot. There needs to be a lot of people doing that. And we'll be able to even the budget out for Focus and do more ministry together. If you can do that, we'll send you a copy of Greg and Aaron's book as our way of saying thank you for being part of the ministry. One-time gift is good as well, but that monthly help really does make a difference. Mm-hmm.
Donate as you can, and our number is 800, the letter A in the word family, 800-232-6459, or you can donate and find more about this great resource, Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage, at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast. And when you're on our website, be sure to look for the link we have to the Loving Well podcast, which is a great podcast hosted by Greg and Aaron, with all sorts of insights like you've heard today and more. So we'll post that link to the Loving Well podcast there at the website. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for joining us today for Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back as we continue the conversation with the Smalleys next time and help you and your family thrive in Christ. Listening to Focus on the Family's weekend broadcast. We'll take a quick break and then return with the second half of this program for your family. Stay tuned. Celebrate a lifelong love this holiday season with a special edition print created just for you by award-winning artist Morgan Weisling. A Lasting Love honors the enduring love and generational impact of marriage, which captures a sweet moment between a couple leaving church set in the pioneer West. See it and get your copy of A Lasting Love at focusonthefamily.com/specialprint. That's focusonthefamily.com/specialprint.
In 1 Corinthians 7:28, it says, "But those who marry will face many troubles in life." And so it says in Scripture, when you get married, you're going to face difficulties. You're going to face hardships. And I always say, thank goodness we can do that together. There's not another person that I would want to face some of the trials, some of the troubles that we've experienced over 30 years of marriage. I wouldn't want to go through any of that without Greg.
That's Aaron Smalley sharing some really good insights and encouragement about marriage. And she and her husband, Dr. Greg Smalley, joined us last time to share a few of their romance secrets that they've identified to help couples build a stronger, healthier relationship. The Smalleys have more to share today on this Valentine's episode of Focus on the Family. Your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
John, last time we talked to Greg and Aaron, I thought in very practical ways about marriage not being about combat, but negotiation. And Just how do we move beyond our triggers emotionally and find healthy ways to resolve conflict, even though they didn't like that word, conflict resolution.
Yeah.
But, you know, these are helpful things. And, you know, part of the goal here at Focus on the Family is to help equip you to have the best marriage you could have. And certainly we all need it. Gene and I need it. I'm sure you and Dina need it. But it's part of human nature to be self-centered and to be, you know, a little bit prideful about what we think is right and who's wrong. Usually isn't you that's wrong, right? It's the other person. Mm. And we covered a lot of that. So if you missed it last time, go back, get the download, get the smartphone app, whatever you need, and you can listen at your leisure. But I thought it was really good content.
Yeah, and what's great about the Smalleys is they bring so many great stories to the table. It's not just head knowledge, it's heart knowledge and experiential, and we're so glad to have them back. They've captured a lot of stories and insights in a terrific resource, Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage, 12 Secrets for a Lifelong Romance. It's a terrific book, and we'd encourage you to get a copy when you call 800, the letter A in the word family, or stop by focusonthefamily.com/broadcast.
Greg and Aaron, welcome back. Thanks for coming down the hall.
Thank you.
I always love saying that because most guests are coming from across country, right? But it's so fun to have you here. I'm grateful that you guys have planted yourself here at Focus on the Family, doing such a great job with the marriage outreach.
We love it.
It's really been wonderful to watch that blossom, really. And people are benefiting from it. Their marriages are benefiting from it. So thanks for leading that overall effort. We really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
Let's jump back in. It was so much fun last time. Hopefully the listeners, the viewers enjoyed that. You guys are so transparent. That's what I love. It's just right out there. And here's how we argue. This is what we argue about. We know it's stupid, but this is how you repair that. It was just so refreshing because so many of us as couples, we're struggling with the same stuff.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
You know, and it just equips us to, I think the right way and therefore do the right thing. Let's discuss the importance of husbands and wives spending time together. Now, when you're doing this, spending time together is not about the budget. I mean, sometimes that's true. You got to do that. But what's your definition of spending time together? What's that look like for each of you?
I would say, Jim, that there's this deep longing inside of each of us to be fully known. So therefore, when we're spending this deeper level time, because like you said, we can talk about the budget, we can have conflict, we can small talk, but there's something about, I always say, going under the waterline and really seeking to know what's really going on inside of Greg, what's going on inside of his heart, as well as me sharing what's going on inside of me. There's something so, it's such a deep need inside of each of us to be fully known in that way.
Huh.
And I, it was interesting, we at our marriage events will ask the crowd at some point to have them rate what percent of their time, their communication, is devoted to, you know, just managing the family, business meetings, talking about tasks, who's going to pick up kids, who's running to the store, that kind of stuff. And it blows my mind that on average, it's about 90% of our communication is around almost like administrating our marriage, having a business meeting. And the problem is, if that's all we end up talking about, quite honestly, the marriage can get boring. Like, if I know that anytime Aaron and I are going to talk, we're probably going to work out who's doing what or whatever, it robs us then of really, as Aaron was saying, learning and updating each other below the waterline. We call that inner life conversation. The problem is that sort of conversation, when I'm finding out, how are you really feeling? What's stressing you out? What are you dreaming about? Whatever, what's going on in your life? That stuff will never happen on its own.
So it's just going, how do we create that space just to check in? And I know for Greg, he likes to know what we're going to talk about. So, you know, sometimes I'll ask him, you know, what was the high of your day? What was the low of your day? You know, what's stressing you out? What are you dreaming about? What are you looking forward to in the next month?
Huh.
So just some very specific questions. It helps him to not be so flooded
when
I say, hey, I want to talk.
Yeah.
And we've actually figured out two things around this that have made such a huge difference in our 30 years of marriage. And one is that we're now at the end of the day, so as we're both laying in bed, and I've been initiating this, that I'll ask her, yeah, what was the high of your day and the low of your day? And then we just have a quick, just back and forth. She asks me, and then I will say, what's one thing that I can pray for you about tomorrow? And the time we spend doing that maybe is around 10 minutes. But mm-hmm. I'm telling you, it so connects me to her that there's a way in which that I keep updated, like I keep current with what's going on in her life. So that's been one thing that's made such a big difference. The other, and this is really my favorite, is that we've started playing a card game while we eat. It's
elaborate.
After 30 years of marriage, this is what we now do.
Okay.
So it's Monopoly Deal. And it's a fun little game, but we're playing something which hits on my love language. We're doing something. Like, as much as Aaron says, I want to spend this deep time talking, that doesn't necessarily do it for me. I like to be doing something together. So we're playing the card game, and then I'm just simply asking her, tell me about your day. We just get in these great conversations.
It's your role. Hey, what are you doing? Hey, you can't take my property.
But no, it's not like this high-paced, challenging game that you've got to think about. It's just mindless. So we're doing something together, having fun. So we're laughing mm-hmm. and we're talking. Mm. And both of those things, so what we're doing right before we go to sleep, just kind of catching up and then doing something, having fun. And again, over dinner, I never would have thought. We actually take these cards when we go out to a restaurant, and we'll just simply play and talk because it gets me, because I'm doing something fun, and I'm more likely to talk.
Yes, and what I love about it is I love to talk. I mean, I can talk at any point, but I love that Greg is being able to experience what helps him to warm up into the conversation.
You're not looking over at the restaurant, looking at people, looking at you.
We don't
care. Less.
Yeah. You know, that he's doing something, exactly, that he's doing something fun, and then I get to lean in and have fun too and talk. And I like to talk.
Yeah, no, that's good. It's fun to find a groove, if I can use that term, to get that going. Mm-hmm. And that's great that you guys have done that. We tend to eat dinner and then we do board games after dinner, but I don't know that speed Scrabble would work with spaghetti.
We might give it a try.
The two things that bubble up, and when folks contact us, you the viewer on YouTube or the listener, however you're listening, and we love the two-way communication. We don't want this to be a monologue, so we love when you get in touch with Focus and let us know how a program strikes you or what help you need. That's why we're here. And the two things that bubble the most in marriage are finances, like we just talked about, you know, that little epiphany, maybe we need to do something differently, and then physical intimacy. I mean, those are the two things that will come up over and over in marriage. Communication would be in that same spot. But speak to the way that we in the Christian community talk or don't talk mm-hmm. about physical intimacy, the damage that the don't talk about it does to us. Mm. And then how that becomes dangerous to a marriage.
Mm-hmm. And you're exactly right. So many couples are not talking about this gift that God has given us in marriage.
The wedding present.
Yes. And so often there's such a misunderstanding as well about what it is. Like, what is this physical intimacy and what is the purpose of it? And really looking at, so often we think, well, you know, I don't think we do this on purpose, but sometimes we end up thinking like, this is for me to be pleased, to be served, versus looking at this physical intimacy as a gift that in many ways, like Greg was saying earlier, that we both matter, and really looking at how do we pursue this in a way that feels good to both of us.
Yeah, that's
remember,
good.
Right before our wedding night, you know, my dad did the classic, hey, son, you know, I want to share a couple things.
If I forgot a few things, let's...
Yeah, yeah. So I'm like, is this about you?
Thankfully, I think I've covered that ground with Trent and Troy, but I don't want to do that on his wedding night.
And I got his heart, and it was actually sweet advice. Yeah. But the advice itself, though, now I disagree with. And basically, here's what he said to me. He goes, son, you know, as you and Aaron experience that physical intimacy, you know, that wedding present, as you put it, he goes, your job is to be a servant. This is about you really thinking about her needs, serving her, pleasing her. And looking back now, I again understand what he meant, mm-hmm. but the problem is, as Aaron talked about, that this needs to be about both of us. This just isn't about me thinking about Erin and how do I serve and please her. I have to matter in that as well. In what Erin and I believe, if both the husband and wife come together in a way to where they are serving one another, but and thinking about what do I want? What do I want mm-hmm. in this moment of us being together? That if you're thinking about both, everybody has to matter to each person.
You know, so often, and I'm seeing it more and more, that post-COVID, women are carrying a lot of anxiety. Anxiety as well as, you know, you think about everything that a mom or a young wife carries, you know, career and home stuff and, you know, kids and on, it's just a lot. And so often what I encourage them to think about is what's getting in the way for you as far as creating space to prepare to engage with your husband in this way and really evaluating what is it that's getting in the way. Is it that I'm carrying a lot and that I'm anxious and, you know, which makes sense. But then, you know, or is it hormones or is it a season of life? And but then what do I do? And really fighting for this connection with your spouse, with your husband, and looking at what is it that's getting in the way? Is it prior abuse? You know, going in and seeking counseling, going in and talking to your doctor about hormone difficulties or whatever it is. And I would say the best thing you can do is talk to each other about it, because often what we end up doing is assuming, you know, if he's not pursuing me, well, then he doesn't find me attractive or, you know, what's going on over in his yard. And so it's just looking at, open up that dialogue in a way that feels good to both of you. And if that means going in and sitting with a third party, with a pastor, a mentor, a counselor, do that.
You know, Erin and I were seeing a couple in a counseling session not too long ago. And I loved, Erin, how you challenged this wife going in, by the way, you will enjoy this as well. Like, this is for not just his benefit mm-hmm. and for the relationship connection, but this is actually mm-hmm. so you can enjoy this. Because she kind of her belief is growing up in her family, whatever, even in the Christian culture, was this is just about me pleasing my husband, or this is the right thing that we should do for our marriage. And she was left out of that mm-hmm, equation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and really looking at, yes, it benefits women and men. It benefits our marriage. I actually wrote an article, something like the 10 benefits of physical intimacy for a woman. And there are benefits. It lowers your stress level, is physically a positive thing for you. So it's just looking at that. Women, we matter too in this whole thing of physical intimacy.
Yeah. And again, it's a touchy subject, but the Christian community, we need to talk about it.
And if you don't know who to talk with, give us a call here to talk to one of our caring Christian counselors. Get in touch for help and also to learn more about the book written by Greg and Erin Smalley called Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage. Our number is 800, the letter A in the word family. Online, you can find out more at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast. This Focus on the Family broadcast will continue in just a moment.
If the fights with your spouse have become unbearable, if you feel like you can't take it anymore, there's still hope. Hope Restored Marriage Intensives have helped thousands of couples like yours. Our biblically based counseling will help you find the root of your problems and face them together. Call us at 1-866-875-2915. We'll talk with you, pray with you, and help you find out which program will work best. That's 1-866-875-2915.
Thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. Let's resume now with the balance of today's programming.
I was really intrigued by a quote in the book, and it kind of goes back to what we talked about yesterday with Sun Tzu, The Art of War, which again I read in my business classes. I didn't apply it to my marriage. It seemed a little dicey, but you did. And you said in the book, every great love story is set in the midst of war. Mm-hmm. That sounds odd. Who wants to explain it?
Well, one is because we have an enemy who hates marriage.
He hates, I love that analogy.
God created marriage, and anything God created, Satan hates.
So war between good and evil, not between husband and wife necessarily. Well, it'll manifest that way.
Both. Yeah. And so, because what's interesting is that, you know, Aaron and I've been married 30 years, and something that I just so now understand is that what Aaron and I can accomplish together is far greater than anything we could have done on our own. There's a synergy there. The unity, our oneness, that honestly, that's a superpower.
And it's a threat to Satan.
Right.
Let because me just say it that way.
He knows what we're capable of, our marriage is capable of, and he fears that.
Yeah.
And so he comes after us in all kinds of ways. And he does get us fighting. He wants us disunified. He doesn't want us one and unified, operating together, pursuing something together. And so Aaron and I believe that our marriage exists on a battlefield. And there are times that battlefield, then we become adversaries. And all of a sudden now we're fighting each other. And yet if we can remember first and foremost that that's exactly what Satan wants, mm-hmm. that he wants to take our unity away. One of my favorite examples, and this is still one of my favorite marriage stories. We were in the process of purchasing a home, and it was so stressful for me. I was worried about the finances and the budget, and as my personality will worry about those things, Erin's a dreamer, and I love her vision, and she can start imagining, you know, well, if we had this kind of furniture or this thing, and as she would talk about these things, it was so stressing me out.
And I could tell, like this one time we were sitting in the living room, and all of our kids were home, and the girls and I were talking about, I said, oh yeah, the buyers want, you know, that piece of furniture and this piece of furniture and this. And I'm like, yeah, because then we can just replace it with new stuff and just dreaming. And I was watching Greg.
Well, no, all of a sudden I go, stop. Like I yell out, stop it. And it was so awkward. Everybody just slowly turned around and looked at me. And I said, Aaron, you have promised me that you will stick to the budget, and I'm overhearing you, and everything you laid out would like triple our budget. And so Aaron gets up. So she's across the room. Uh-huh. She gets up and purposefully comes right at me and stands over me. And for the first time in our 30 years, I really thought that she was going to scream at me, or worse yet, you know, hit me. I don't know what was going to happen, but she had that look, and she gets right in my face, and then she grabs my face and she holds me and gets right eye level, and she goes, listen to me. And I'm thinking, oh man, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. I'm in so much trouble. She goes, I love you. We are on the same team, and I will do nothing around spending money that isn't a win for both you and for me. And then she plants the biggest kiss on me. And then,
kiss, and then
drops me.
No better.
And
then
goes right
box
back
away
to the couch and starts talking with the girls again as if nothing happened.
She had you.
But what
you
so,
had me at the kiss.
What so struck me, though, is that in that moment, I allowed Satan to rob our union, our oneness. I became Aaron's adversary. I saw her as my adversary. And in that moment, our unity was broken. The fact that she came over there and did that restored that.
Yeah, and what I will say is that 10 years ago, I probably could not have done that. But doing my own work, no, meaning that I would have been triggered myself. But watching everything play out, I was like, you know what? He's just worried that I'm not with him. And so I was able to kind of self-soothe and keep my heart open, and then I was able to go over and just say, I'm not going to do anything that is going to harm our team, because we're a team.
Have you noticed a pattern? Every Friday night he wants to talk about the budget now. He's waiting for the kiss.
That's right. It's beneficial.
Hey, honey, let's talk about the budget.
I put those together. But yeah.
You're spending way too much money.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll be like, yeah, I haven't spent any all week. But the opportunity is just recognizing there's all kinds of things that we're going to face together as a couple. And we can do that individually, or we can do that together.
And it kind of leads to this open closed heart idea that you also have in the book, being aware, mm-hmm. I would think, of an open and a closed heart between mm-hmm. you. And mm-hmm. then how do you try to keep more of an open heart more consistently?
Yes. Yeah. And the key to that, what's so important, is I used to think that Greg had to do something for me to get my heart back open. And that is not the case at all. Hmm. I personally, that God has given me my heart and has told me to guard my heart. And it's my job to keep my heart open. There's times it's going to close when we have, you know, a negative interaction or he screams stop from across the room. My heart, you know, may close, but I have full ability to manage my heart and to get it back open. Me and God, we've got that.
Wow, that's a big statement you're making. I'm sure some women are going, I don't know if I agree with that. But I get but that's a far healthier place to be, that it's not, well, either spouse, it's not the other one's responsibility to open or close your heart. I mean, probably we're closing each other's hearts more than we're opening them, but it's my responsibility to keep my heart open.
And that means that I've got to show up and be aware of what's going on inside of me and continuing to grow in who I am as a person and in my faith and, you know, processing when my heart gets shut down.
Right.
And really go to the greatest commandment. So this is sort of cheating, because how do you argue against Jesus saying this is the greatest commandment, to love God, to love others as you love yourself? That means that as I love me means to keep my heart open. If I'm going to love God, if I'm going to love others, and Aaron is my closest other, that means that I've got to be doing the job of keeping my heart open and keeping my heart well cared for. And that's really what is meant within that verse, the as part of love God, love others as you love yourself.
Yeah.
And one thing that I want to clarify too is that sometimes that means setting a boundary.
Sure.
And, you know, making that line that, you know what, the way you're treating me is not okay. Because often what we think is when we set that boundary, I'm doing it to keep Greg out. Really, when I set that boundary and I say, hey, that doesn't feel good to me, I'm setting that boundary to keep my heart open. And sometimes we don't recognize that is the purpose of that.
That's really good. And there's so much more in this great resource that you two have done. Let me ask you this, though, for the couple that they're hearing this going, wow, this is painting a picture of our relationship. Why is there such a, probably a stigma would be a good way to describe it, to get help? I mean, so many couples suffer in silence. They don't get the help they need. Sometimes it's both of them that don't want to get the help, or one, and it puts the other one at a great disadvantage, because what do you do? And so speak to the stigma of not wanting help, but overcoming that. I mean, you're both counselors, so you're doing this every day.
There's so much fear around going in, you know, what is this person going to say? Are they going to blame me? And, you know, what am I going to become aware of? Some deep childhood
something.
Will they
show that actually I'm damaged and unlovable? Those kinds of things.
And what I love when a couple walks into my office, first and foremost, I will praise their courage for coming in, because it does take courage to walk into a counselor's office. And then I say, you know, of course, you're here with this stranger, and now you're sharing some deep heart things that, you know, you usually don't share with a stranger. So it takes time to build that connection, that safety within the counseling relationship.
But the point in all that is the risk is your marriage is going to get better. I mean, that's the thing. That's the hope, right?
Yes.
I guess it's not guaranteed, but that is a more typical outcome.
And if nothing else, you're in a place that feels safe, that you can have some of those harder conversations with a third party who's able to help manage the level of safety in the room.
Right. And if, you know, the bottom line is, if you've got concrete boots on this subject, you just can't move, you're feeling stuck as a couple, call us here at Focus. We've been at this for 45 years. I don't think you're going to surprise us, and we can be the initial start to getting you the help that you need. And don't hold back. It's a free call. I mean, we'll have a counselor get back in touch with you. But why not? It doesn't even cost you anything. So why not start there? We have a great referral list of other counselors in your area, probably. I think we cover most of the United States, that we can refer you to a qualified Christian counselor, even in your town or city. So let's do that. Give us a call. Don't hold back. Get the help you need to have a more God-centered, biblically oriented marriage today.
Our number is 800, the letter A in the word family, 800-232-6459. Or stop by the website, that's focusonthefamily.com/broadcast.
And also, obviously, this great book, Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage, what a resource to start reading together and talk about. There's 12 key secrets for a lifelong romance that Greg and Aaron talk about. Just talk about those 12 things and read what they've said about them. That'll get you started in the right direction toward that North Star really toward the Lord. Mm. And I think it'd be a great resource if you can send a gift of any amount. If you can do that monthly, it really helps us be part of the ministry, help save other marriages and help parents do a better job, save a baby's life through supporting us every month. $10, $20 is terrific. And as a thank you, we'll send you the book and we can do ministry together. Mm.
Join the support team as you can when you call 800, the letter A in the word family, or stop by the website, that's focusonthefamily.com/broadcast. And we'd like to have you as well check out the Loving Well podcast that Greg and Aaron host, which addresses respect in marriage and cherishing your spouse and what it looks like to put Christ's love in the center of your relationship. And again, details about the Loving Well podcast are at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast.
Greg, Aaron, thanks again for being with us. This is really fun and helpful.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks. We won't say goodbye. We'll just say see you
at lunch.
Later.
At lunch.
And thank you for joining us today for Focus on the Family. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, I'm John Fuller, inviting you back as we once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.